There are many verses in the Bible that we have memorized, that we have quoted again and again and again. And we quote them to each other, some of these verses, again and again and again. And I think some of them are misused. I think two of the most misused verses in all the Bible, wrongly quoted verses in all the Bible, were in the text that Charlie read to you this morning. People go to Philippians 4:13 and they quote that as the Superman verse. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So whatever task is before me, I can do it. I can pass this test. I can do this job. I can conquer this temptation because I can do all things through Christ. The Superman verse. Or there's verse 19, the Bill Gates verse. But my God shall supply all your need. Lord, you know I need a new car, so come on. Put that new car in my wallet. You can do this. Because my God will supply all your needs according to his riches, all the wealth of God. I think that those applications of these two verses are grossly out of context. And so here we go again. Let's review. What's this book about? I think the book of Philippians, starting with chapter 1, verse 27, has been about our progressive sanctification. Thank you, Doug, for that plug, for that theology term in your testimony today. It's been about God changing us, conforming us to being like Jesus. He starts in 1:27 when he says, only let your conduct be as it becomes the gospel of Christ. Let everything you do conform to the idea that you're supposed to be like Jesus. And in preaching that to us, he's talked about enemies. He's talked about divisions among us. He's talked about our selfish ambition. You can't be like Jesus and be full of selfish ambition. He's taught us to humble ourselves and be like Christ. He's taught us to live for others. He's taught us to know Christ. He's taught us to think about our citizenship being in heaven. And then in last week's text, he was teaching us how to think, that we should not worry, that we should pray instead, and that we should focus on thinking godly thoughts, and that we should joy, we should rejoice. So our sanctification includes our thought process. And now Paul comes again to 4:10, and he gets personal one more time. There in 4:10 I read, but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again. And I think what he's talking about is maybe it's fleshed out better in 4:18, where we get the story a little bit. Paul says, indeed, I have all and abound. I am full, having received from Epaphroditus the things sent from you, a sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. We'll get there next week. But obviously, the Philippian church took up a financial offering, and they sent it several hundred miles from the north side of what is today the Grecian peninsula, Macedonia. There, that church in Philippi sent an offering, and he took it either across the Adriatic Sea or up over the mountains and came back down to to Rome. I dare say he took boats, and Epaphroditus got to Rome with this financial offering. He couldn't just wire it like we would. You know, we would just send it through banks and the internet and bang, it's there. No, it probably took many weeks, maybe a couple of months. Epaphroditus gets to Rome and he gives to Paul this gift. And we know from earlier that Epaphroditus gets sick and that he's there to minister to Paul, and now he's on his way back to Philippi with this letter. So there's some things about this gift that Paul states here. One, I note that Paul was encouraged and he praised God for the current ability of the Philippians. Look at verse 10. He was excited that they had money. Look at verse 10. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you did care, but you lacked opportunity. You wanted to give to me before this, but you didn't have the cash. And so I see that Paul's excited that they had the a wherewithal to do so. He was also encouraged for their spirit. They wanted to do it in the past, and now they actually did it. So Paul was excited about that. He complimented them for the good deed that they did. Look at the spiritual fruit. Look at verse 14. Nevertheless, you've done well. and that you shared with my in my distress. And then I see in verse 17 that he promises the Philippians that there's going to be some compensation. God is going to bless you because you're blessing me. Look at verse 17. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek fruit that abounds to your account. So maybe you could get other things out of the story from this text, but I think there are some facts here. And these two statements that I talked about, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ. Philippians 4:19, but my God shall supply all your need. Those two statements cannot be lifted from Paul's overwhelming, overarching theme of sanctification, nor can they be lifted from this immediate context of him talking about how we respond and this incident, this gift. I think it's fair to say that today's text, we're going to look at 4:13 today. We're going to look at 4:19 in 2 weeks. Next week is Lord's Table, and I think I'm going to deviate from it and come back then to Philippians in 2 weeks. Philippians 4:13, I think, is a continuation in some ways of the thinking text that he just got done, where he said, rejoice, don't worry, think about godly things. And then he kind of brings that into another spiritual idea and ends with, I can do all things. What's going on in verses 10 through 13? I would propose to you, and this would be my thesis this morning, that it's the last word in verse 11. Let me read verses 10 through 13 again to you and see if you don't think that Paul is talking about being content. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Let's state some obvious negatives. This does not mean that Paul could do whatever he wanted to do. Only Samson was given superhuman strength in the Bible. Only Jesus resisted all temptations. Moses had people that didn't like him often. Paul had an infirmity from which he was never cured. Jeremiah was depressed. Peter denied Jesus. All these people, good guys in the Bible, then if we can do all things through Christ, what happened to them? This is also not this verse, I can do all things through Christ. This is not a name it, claim it theology. This is not a power of positive thinking from the last generation. This is not today's Joel Osteen theology. Let me read you a couple quotes from his book, Your Best Life Now, 7 Steps to Living to Your Full Potential. Listen to what Pastor Osteen says. Start calling yourself healed, happy, whole, blessed, and prosperous. Stop talking to God about how big your mountains are and start talking to your mountains of how big your God is. Here's another quote from this book. Don't just accept whatever comes your way in life. You were born to win. You were born for greatness. You were created to be a champion in life. I do not believe that's what Paul is talking about in Philippians 4:13 when he says, I can do all things. He's not talking about if you only think about it right, if you only put yourself in the right, God wants you to be this, so name it, claim it, grab it. You're a winner, be a winner, act like a winner. Tell the mountain to go away because your God is bigger than the mountain. I think that is a gross distortment of what's going on here in the text, as I think Paul's primary theme is sanctification and how to think, and specifically, how to be content. My thesis this morning is this. The mature Christian is content. Simple enough. Number one, contentment is not found in circumstances. Paul says, I have found in whatever state I am. And then notice what he says. I know how to be abased. I know how to be broke. Been there, done that. I know how to be in a prison. He was there then. I know what it's like to have the Jews want to kill me. I know what that's like, Paul says. I know what it's like to be stoned as they left me for dead in Lystra. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to be shipwrecked. I know what it's like to starve. I know what it's like to be beaten by Jewish people with 40 stripes across my back. I know what that's like. Paul says, I know how to be abased. I know how to do that. And then he also says, I know how to abound. I know how to act when things are going well. I know how to rejoice in the goodness of God. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Paul had many things that were negative circumstances, the distractors in the church, the separation from those he loved. The fact that he was in prison meant he was hindered from the work that he felt like he was called to do. The physical ailment that God would not heal. In all these things, in all these circumstances, Paul said, I have learned to be content. So the mature Christian is content. And contentment is not determined by circumstances. Number two this morning, contentment is learned. Learned. Did you pick up on that word? I find it three times in these three, in about four verses. In verse 9, he uses the word learn to talk about action. It's something you got to do. You don't just get by osmosis. That's never happened. People have never passed a test by sleeping on the textbook. Doesn't work. Okay? I know students have been trying it for many years, but it's never worked, right? I've learned something. That means there's work involved. That means there's activity involved. That means your brain has to be active and challenging and changing. I've learned. Contentment is something that is learned. It's in verse 10. It's in response to a need. In verse 11, it's really the testimony of Paul's life. I've learned that no matter what happens, I've learned this. God hates whining. Should we have all the parents raise their hand if they hate whining? Yeah. But you know what? I'm good at whining. After all, sometimes it's the only way I can get my way. You know, if I don't whine a little, I'm going to be ignored. And so I have to whine to get my way. Huh? Been there, done that? God hated whining so much with the children of Israel that he sent snakes. He sent snakes to bite them and kill them because of their whining, because of their complaining. Moses lost his temper because of their whining. I think whining is a natural thing because of my sinful nature. It's as natural in my heart as breathing. We naturally whine, and therefore we must determine to learn contentment. Contentment is a chosen right response to a world that is not right. Contentment is a chosen godly response to a world that is not godly. Can I say that again? Contentment is a chosen right response to a world that is not right. Contentment is a chosen godly response to a world and circumstances that are never godly. I have learned, in whatever state I am, therefore, to be content, Paul says. I also note that not only does he mention the word learned in this context, but he mentions the word peace. Peace. In verse 9, he says, the things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. People desire peace, but people do not desire to learn how to be content. I don't think I'm stretching Paul's thought process or his sequencing of things too much to say that he goes from talking about peace in verse 9 to talking about contentment in verse 11. To have peace, you must learn contentment. If we would have the presence of God's peace, we must be content with what we have. That's a logical thing. Someone who is not content will never be at peace. I'm so upset. Fretting my mind all the time, conflict in my marriage and conflict with my kids, and oh, what are we going to do about this? Well, the truth of the matter is, if you would learn how to be content, then you could be at peace. And the opposite of learning how to be content is rebellion. When you don't like your marriage, when you don't like your kids, when you don't like your job, when you are discontent, the very seed, the heart of rebellion is discontentment. We rebel and we whine and complain because we are not happy with what we have. We are not content. The seed of rebellion is discontentment. Rebellion always destroys peace. Rebellion and peace are diametrically opposed. And therefore, it logically follows from there that not only is contentment not found in circumstances and contentment is learned, but contentment is the same thing as submission. Number three, contentment is submission. And I think that is, now we're actually getting to the verse 4:13. When Paul says, I can do all things, I think he's talking about obedience to the circumstances that he found himself in. He found himself in prison. He said, I can do that. He found himself not liked by everybody in the church at Rome. There were some who were actually preaching out of joy the fact that he was in prison. Paul says, I can do that. There were some people that were Jews that wanted to see him dead. And Paul said, I can do that. Nero may cut off his head. And Paul said, I can do that. Whatever state I am, I'll submit to that. I can do that. Contentment is submission to God's sanctifying work in me. Whatever God is allowing to come into my life. And you know my theology when it comes to fatalism. I'm not that way. I believe that the wrong in our life is a direct result of Adam and Eve's sin, and we are reaping the natural consequences of that again and again and again. But I also believe that a God lives who is in control. And whatever God has allowed to come into my life, whatever it is, I need to submit and be content with what he's doing and what he is allowing to do. I don't believe that he orchestrates the abuse, but he has allowed the abuse. Now, what can I learn? How can I grow? How can I change? How can I be more like Jesus in this situation? Bullying is always wrong. However, if I'm being bullied, how can I grow? It is wrong for someone to cheat, but if I'm being cheated, how can I grow? How can I use these circumstances? How can I submit to what God is allowing into my life that I might be more like Jesus? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can do sickness. I can do health. I can do poverty. I can do wealth. I can do marriage. I can do divorce. I can do birth. I can do death. I can do temptation. Here comes temptation. Oh, I just can't. I can't. You know, that's a lie I keep telling myself, that we keep telling ourselves, that when it comes to lust or when it comes to this incredibly weak flesh that we have, this person that I am, that I can't do it. I just get angry, or I just lust. I give in to temptation. I'm just always afraid. I can't get over the fear. No, that's a lie. I can do all things. Whatever God is allowing to come into my life, I can do. So the two statements are there. One is, I have everything I need from God to rightly respond to every circumstance. And the second thing, I have everything I need from God to obey every command. I have everything I need from God to rightly respond. I have everything I need to obey. Just go down the Ten Commandments. There, have no other gods before me. I can do that. Don't make a graven image. I can do that. Honor your father and your mother. I can do that. Obey authority. I can do that. Love other people. I can do that. Forgive. I can do that. Give. I can do that. Be content. I can do that. Love my wife. I can even do that. Provoke not my children to wrath. It gets a little harder, but yeah, I can do that, right? Because I can do all things. Last week's text, be kind. Oh, that's contrary to me, but I can do that. Because contentment is found in submitting to what God is allowing to come into your life, that this process of sanctification might continue, which is making me be more like Jesus. Contentment is not the absence of desire. I believe that we should really hate a mindset that is in us, that has found its expression in the contemporary expression, whatever. You know, you tell a teenager they can't do something, whatever. You tell someone that you think something's wrong, whatever. that expression has seemed to pass from the scene, and I'm glad, but the spirit, I think, is still present. Contentment is not saying whatever. That's that idea of passive acceptance of whatever. That's not contentment. Contentment is rather an active choice, an active emotion that's not merely ignoring my feelings and wants. Rather, contentment is actively pursuing what I have. Contentment with my marriage is not just saying, hey, whatever, but rather to love my wife. Contentment in my marriage is not saying, oh, there he goes again. I guess I just have to endure having him for a husband. That's not contentment. That's sickness. That'll lead to mental illness. No, contentment is saying, I am going to work to submit to him. I'm going to work to make him be everything he could be for Jesus Christ. As much as it lies in me, as his wife, that's hard for me to say, as much as it lies in me, as his wife, I'm going to do everything I can to do my part in making him to be everything he ought to be, that he might lead me according to God's word. That is contentment. Not the absence of desire, but rather it is the active pursuing of what God is ordaining. If you have a child, God has ordained that you rear that child for God's glory. Contentment is not the absence of doing that. Oh well, whatever he does, I guess can't control it. No, no, no. It's the active engaging in being a father, being the leader, being the godly example, being the mentor, being the lawgiver for that child, being Moses, standing in the place of the lawgiver, that child would know truth and judgments and righteousness and teachings that would come directly from God, to stand actively in that place, that child may know who God is because they saw him in you. That is contentment. It's submitting to the role that God has given you. I can do all things through Christ, who strengthens me. I would say number four then this morning, contentment is God's gift. Who strengthens me? God gives me what I need that I might do contentment. Not that contentment would happen to me, but that I would learn it and that I would do contentment. It is something we have to learn how to do. The mature Christian is content. It's not found in the circumstances. It's learned. It's submission to what God is doing. It is God's gift. God, here comes a circumstance. Here comes a relationship struggle. Here comes an economic hardship. Here comes a physical trouble. Here comes sin against me. All these things just come my way, come my way, come my way. And by the way, if you're sitting out here this morning and you say, oh, but Pastor, you don't know the trouble. Come on, get off your horse. We're all here at the same level. Yes, we're different. Yes, people go through some horrendous trials. I acknowledge that. I'm not saying that there are not people who are uniquely sinned against. We are all level in this. God has given to you the grace, the gifts, to respond rightly to whatever he's allowed to come into your life. I can do all things. I can do this trial. I can do this struggle. I can do this part of my sanctification through Christ who strengthens me. That's God's gifting. That's God's gracing that God would give us for this trial now, everything I need to be content. Contentment is a spiritual grace available to all Christians. I'm glad Paul did not write, I can endure all things. That's not what he wrote. He said, I can do all things. This is not about waiting our life out until the rapture or waiting our life out until we win the lottery. Contentment is submitting to and doing what God is working in our life today. I think way too many Christians spend their whole Christian life hoping for change, hoping that God will somehow do something to get them out of here. Zap this situation, change my husband, change my wife, change my kids, change my government, change the finances, change my job, change my boss, change the weather. And so we spend our whole life hoping and praying that God would change something. You know what he wants to change? Yeah, I gotcha. He wants to change you. He wants to change you. I can do all things through Christ, because in whatever state I've in, I have learned to be content. Oh, that what I just said would be my testimony. God, I pray that you would use your word. Heads bowed and eyes closed this morning. Here's your invitation. First, an opportunity of repentance. I'm going to let you repent by keeping your hands down in this one. If you would testify, as God is my witness, I think I can honestly say, I am content. Would you raise your hand? I am content. That describes me. Ouch. I assume by not raising your hand that most of you then would be saying, I've got some work to do. So what are you going to do about it? How are you going to change your mind? How are you going to learn to be content? How are you going to change your actions that God might do this part of his sanctifying work in you?